Hello, hello, dear viewer, and welcome to a new episode of The Quill. Hey, you can see me. I'm glad you can. If you're watching live, thank you. If you're listening, thank you. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe and all that good stuff and share it. So welcome to back to a new episode. Last time we talked about a lot of interesting stuff. We went a bit more in depth about how the communists grasped Romania basically in 1944, basically in August, and we kind of talked about the people behind it, the logic behind it, the how and the why. So now we're gonna basically just move along and see what happens after the Russians get their paws on Transylvania, and after, you know, they got here in Romania. Because while we talked about how they got their claws and they infiltrated Romania, we didn't really talk in depth about what they did. We just touched on subject, and this time I have some small insignificant numbers to back everything what I've said last time up. And here we start with the fact that back in 1944, right after Romania was liberated by the Russians and the Soviets in August, well, the army took over 100,000 prisoners from the army and stationed them on the eastern border. And not just that, but of course they continued to basically deport people in gulags and kill any and all sympathizers, at least Nazi sympathizers and workers, which is always just a wonderful thing to open in the first 3 minutes of the podcast. But yeah, so they basically did that, and we also mentioned that Romania, while yes, the Allies agreed to give Transylvania back to them, Romania wouldn't see that territory for another 2 years, basically. So yeah, it's really interesting to see how the Russians negotiate from here on out, and how they manipulate the Romanians and the Romanian system. And there are a few videos and theories out there. Some are more in the realm of the reality, some are more outlandish, but in the end, you know, history is also very interpretable in some sense. Not that it's, you know, fully to anyone's interpretation and we go around spouting nonsense like the Holocaust didn't happen, but there is some slight interpretation which causes debate usually. So let's get into all that stuff. On the, if you're watching live or on YouTube, you have on your screen a very nice video right now with some Sisk people in Transylvania at a wedding in 1945. Because while we started with the deportation of over 100,000 people, let's get into something more cheerful, because, you know, depressing stuff is all around us, and we're gonna talk about depressing stuff this episode. Because, well, it wasn't quite the happiest of times in Transylvania since the occupation, and we even touched on this by telling you guys that, well, the people living in Transylvania went through a lot of changes, drastic changes from the 1941, basically Transylvania being taken by the Hungarians, then Romanians and Russians taking it back in 1944, and there you have it. You have like three major changes in just a split few years, and of course that was everything but a shock to all the people, including my grandfather, which, you know, started, you know, when the war started he was 5, and when the war ended he was 10, and he had to drop out of school. So yeah, it's something very interesting, honestly, in my opinion, to kind of note and, you know, see. So let's get on with it, because we're gonna enter 1944. So after the execution of Romanians and any sympathizers and anyone that wanted, you know, to harm anyone, my grandfather was now living through the hills around Cluj-Napoca, and, you know, as a 10-year-old that just dropped out of school, this isn't quite the pleasant thing to live through. When he talked about this period of his life and how he had to fend off himself, I can even remember now him crying and, you know, mourning the deaths of friends and family and the persecution he had to endure, you know, eating whatever leftovers of fruit he could gather up, and trying to stay away from any and all enemies, because you, for any reason, could not trust neither the Hungarians nor the Nazis during that period of 4 years where they had Transylvania, nor the Romanian, and especially the Russians, after they regained Romania regained Transylvania and Russia was on a full offensive towards the west and making its way through Hungary and towards Berlin. So obviously he was shell-shocked by that, and you can imagine that having to drop out due to the bombardment of your town and of the place you live, and having no school to go back to because it's completely destroyed, it's something terrifying. And while we can joke from a far removed position, like, remember when we wished that the school would burn down because you wouldn't want to go to school on a certain day for some reason, or because you had a test or something, having that actually happen and being bombarded while you try to just live the best life possible and trying to not disturb anyone and adapt to now a regime that was telling you to learn a foreign language because that's the official language now, and then having to learn Romanian, and later you'll see that any communist country was forced, especially here in Europe, to learn Russian, which is why, for example, in the Republic of Moldova, while they have their official language, well, Romanian, it's Moldovan basically, because it's very much mixed with Russian since they were under direct rule of, Stalin and at the end Gorbachev. So they weren't as lucky, for example, as Romania, which had its own dictatorships with Gheorghiu Dej and Ceausescu, which today we're famous for, especially for Ceausescu. So here we basically had of the plan of what the Russians wanted to do and succeeded in doing, and the basically a big line out here with Romania, 23rd of August, Romania declared war on Germany. On September 8th, Bulgaria declared war on Germany, and October 5th, Hungary announces end of hostility. And on October 18th, General Milos, First Hungarian Army, joins the Soviets. And of course, there's much more to all that. But now that we have this lovely map, let's talk about what was about to happen at the end of the 1944s before getting into 1945. Last time we left off, Soviet troops were pushing. Rommel commits suicide in October. Germans surrender at Aachen. On October 30th, the last use of gas chamber at Auschwitz. French capture Strasbourg on November. In December, civil war in Greece. Battle in Ardennes. And, Soviet troops besiege Budapest. So here we have just a very, very nice roll of events, all pushing towards the end of World War II. But with that said, it also meant that we're getting towards the end of this first season of, the Quill. But that was kind of what was happening in Europe and here in Romania, especially in Transylvania. You can imagine the shell shock one must go through to have no idea if they are truly gonna live another day or not. And of course, the Russians, once they got to Romania, they were very aggressive, not in just deporting Romanians and killing any and all people that were seeing favors and were working with or worked with, Nazi Germany, but also installing their governments, their people, and trying to seize all any and all, means of production to quote that whole thing. So of course, having already put Petru Groza in place and people like Tătărescu and others like Pătrășcanu, you had a lot of people there that were slowly putting their hands into, well, they were putting Romania in the hands of the Russians. So that was obviously something to foresee and something that the current king was unable to defend against, because of course when you have no police, when you have no printing press, no any kind of mass media, any kind of help, and you know you were about to enter 1945, while it was a short-lived celebration, it wasn't really a celebration because things got worse and worse from here. Romania had no time to breathe on either side, because in 1941 they had lost Transylvania, they had lost a third of their population, and thus in 1942 the economy completely tanked. Romania was now one of the poorest European countries. They had no real infrastructure, no real backing from anyone but Nazi Germany, and that was in return of a lot of oil, food and primary resources, which Romania either way couldn't really afford to give, but they were forced due to three deals between Nazi Germany and Antonescu, because he thought that by allying himself with the Nazi he'd somehow regain Transylvania, which of course he didn't. So now with that whole thing out of the way, the Romanians thought, especially those in power, thought that by aligning themselves with the Russians they were going to have a better deal and they were going to survive somehow all the tragedy that practically followed them throughout the 1940s. And of course that was nothing but, they were nothing but wrong, because Romania was only gonna get worse and worse in shape, and the Russians weren't gonna really help, because how could they when they were about to engage in basically a cold war and use Romania and Polonia and Poland and Hungary and Czechoslovakia and Bulgaria in kind of meat shield between, you know, the UK, the US and the Russians. So it was something to behold. Quite the scenery was about to take shape and Europe. So with that said, now that you have this little bit of context, you can imagine that being a Romanian boy having to learn Hungarian, because the Hungarians ruled over the place you lived until you were 10, and then having to learn Russian because of course communism was something quite disturbing, because even today trying to change a child like that and force him to do a bunch of random stuff won't catch on. So my grandfather never really learned Russian, though even to the day he died he remembered quite a bit of Hungarian, whether it was greeting or cuss words or stuff like that, where he could kind of put together a few sentences and decipher what, if they were talking about him and stuff like that. He remembered that, but he couldn't remember because he dropped out any and all Russian. So yeah, he had to adapt, but he just couldn't, shell-shocked, he just couldn't give another damn and chose to live a life of modesty, you know, in the countryside, going back to, well, nothing, because since the Russian came and World War II was about to enter 1945 and the end in Europe, obviously that meant that they were about to gather a bunch of land and seize any and all production and all that nasty stuff, you know, that needs to be done in order for communism to be established in any and all countries. So when he went back to his home, luckily he still had a mother, luckily he still had all his brothers and sisters, though he couldn't have all his friends and a few uncles here and there spread with the bombs dropped by the Russians and Romanians when they bombed Cluj. So yeah, it wasn't quite the pretty sight to see, as every other house was either bombed or having had a black flag and either building or searching to buy a casket for their family members, and you know, the priests working overtime, because it was a period of tragedy and grief, even though the Romanians celebrated it as, well, as a victory, because in the end they got Transylvania back. But at what costs is any war, and that means death and loss of life, and that means pain, a lot of pain. And you know, having to live through a bombardment and is one thing, and surviving, but coming back to having friends die and family just being taken away from you after he already lost his father at the age of 5, this wasn't quite the childhood I think he wished for, you know. If you think about what childhood you had or I had, mine were normal compared to these. And the sad thing is, yeah, these still exist, you know, those refugees, those people running away from drugs, bombs, explosions, terrorism, oppression. We still have that in a big part of the world, in a huge chunk of the world, and it's 2019. I can fathom it. I can't, for the love of God, understand how it's still possible with UNICEF, with ONU, with all these organizations. I have no idea how it's still a thing, honestly. You know, I had to document myself. I'm sitting here in front with like 6 tabs opened, which you can't see because I don't want to spoil the magic, obviously, of this podcast. But I sit here and I have a bunch of data in front of me, and it's absolutely nasty. And while you can put kind of in perspective and say that yes, we have fewer and fewer wars and fewer people die, either due to the fact that we were getting better at medicine and technology and diplomacy and stuff like that, there are still a lot of carnage that is absolutely pointless, in my opinion, that's happening today. So yeah, now back to Transylvania, back to my grandfather. with the new year, with 1945, well, it showed promise on one hand due to the fact that the war now was beyond Transylvania, with the siege of Budapest and pushing towards outer, towards Europe. Now, obviously, the Romanian army was following and pushing through together, and of course that meant tragedy in Hungary, and that meant tragedy all throughout Europe, because war is only tragedy. I think I showed you this video once, but let's show it again, with Hungarians defending Budapest here, with this propaganda piece where they were basically saying we're gonna stand our ground until the last bit of blood against the Bolsheviks and the Romanians. And well, they stood their ground, and it took over a few months to get through them, and Romania was part of this battle, Romania and Russia together, through a very, very tough effort to break through Budapest and get to the Hungarian oil fields, and then, you know, march west towards Germany and basically surround Germany in the last attempt to extinguish this war before summer, which would be successful, because as you'll see in a bit on the map, it worked. So this was the map, this was their plan, this was the part that got through to like Hungary, and this is how they wanted to go ahead from Romania and push up from the south through Czechoslovakia to this little bit of Poland, and through Germany up towards Berlin there. And of course they were pushing through Poland, trying to get to the sea here and Estonia here, so they can take this part and then, well, have them surrender from here too, because from this side you already had England and the US, and obviously the south part, which was occupied by the US. Italy was occupied by the US, so the US was slowly pushing up towards Germany as well. With that said, you can imagine that there is gonna be propaganda, and I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but there are pieces that say that, well, Romanians, once they got Transylvania back in at the end of 1944, at least on paper, and once they answered and fought in Budapest and took over Budapest, you can see even here it's circled, because this is still 1944. It was said that the Romanians were very kind to Hungarian people, and there are even videos, well, from the Romanian television that shows Romanians feeding, you know, Hungarian children in Budapest after the siege, and, you know, helping people. But that same kind of video was shown when Germany entered Romania and Hungary entered Romania The same kind of video was shown when Hungarians occupied the northern part of Transylvania, with them coming back to Cluj and being celebrated. That same kind of video was shown when the Russians entered Bucharest and were greeted with flowers, and the Russians spreading pamphlets, and the English people and the US people were, you know, having these broadcasts showing the happiness in Romanians as they were liberated. So I can only imagine how much propaganda was put out to show how we were again saviors after we chose to switch sides and get on with the good guys, and give a push to Bulgaria to change with us, and then force Hungary to come with us and finally beat the Germans. Which, of course, that's how you put it when you want to be a propaganda machine. So, of course, there were tragedies in Transylvania to Hungarian people and to Hungarian people in Hungary, because they were the tragedies that befall Romanians in Transylvania under Hungarian rule were very well known in Romania, with even Antonescu in 1943 going to Hitler himself and telling him, "Man, this is fucked up. They're butchering, they're changing names, they're doing crazy shit in Transylvania. That must stop. Now we're allies, actually." So, of course, once Romania got back at them, they had to do their own horrible, horrible stuff. But because Hungary and the Hungarians were seen as the losers, and not, and since they weren't under the high protection of the Russians, everyone kind of glossed over them, I assume. That's why wherever you can find, it's either very little or it's from a Hungarian nationalist that just wants to exaggerate the things that have been done. So there is no real, you know, footwork where you can say precise, where you can, you know, show an exact image that isn't skewed in any way, sadly. Even though usually Hungarians kept better documents than Romania, but then again, Romania isn't quite honest when it comes to their history and their doings. As we know, they tried to decline that they had any part in the Holocaust a few times now, and every time it bit them back in the ass. I'm talking here about Romania, of course. And the Romanian people. So, yeah, it was a tragedy, just like the tragedies of the Romanian people in Transylvania. Same, right back to the Hungarian people that died and the Jewish people that died in Transylvania and Hungary during World War II. Because, yes, let's not forget that the Holocaust also happened, but now 1945, let's continue with that, because we have to kind of get slowly towards the end. So Romania and Russia slowly take back and push back, actually, the Nazis, and Hungary take over, you know, Budapest. They besiege it. The German troops withdraw from the Ardennes. Soviet troops capture Warsaw. Soviet troops liberate Auschwitz. And Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin meet at Yalta. And here we have to stop a bit again. Of course, there is this beautiful little image showing them happily smiling. Such an historic moment, such an historic photo. What a lovely, lovely photo of the three winners of World War II, basically. Interesting. Well, it's interesting for a few reasons, because at this meeting, we briefly touched on this last time too, at this lovely meeting between these three lovely gentlemen and their generals, it was decided the fate of Europe and how they were gonna split all of it into pieces, what Stalin wanted, what FDR wanted, what the British wanted. Everyone wanted their peace. And of course, the smaller detail, like whatever France wanted and all that, would have been discussed after the end of the war. But since we're in 1945, it was slowly getting there. So this is where the fate of Romania and Czechoslovakia and Hungary and Bulgaria and, you know, Yugoslavia and Polonia were about to be determined too. Since basically Russia wanted territories to basically Finland, everything to Finland to be in their direct and under their direct control, with a puppet government and of course a dictatorship in Poland, one in East Germany, and we all know how Germany was split into two and Berlin two, and then of course one in Hungary, one in Romania, one in Bulgaria, and one in Yugoslavia. But as we mentioned last time, it didn't pan out for his plan in Yugoslavia, at least, and in Poland, where he lost grip, because there were already tensions in Yugoslavia with, you know, the different nations living there, and their very complicated Balkan history, which made the whole region very unstable and very hard to have a grasp on. Even Hitler himself had a big problem during the period he ruled over that region, through to Greece, with the people there, while you had Croatians and Serbians fighting on two opposite sides, even though they were part of the same country and on the same side, kind of what was happening in Transylvania, with Transylvania, Hungary and Romania, but at a much bigger and much more aggressive scale there. Having such a mixed pot of ethnicities and religions, and, you know, just it's just a mess. Even today, it's really a touchy subject, because it's still such a recent subject with what happened in the 1990s. Romania got to have, you know, Romania sent a few of its men there, because they had two, and one of those men I already mentioned was Petru Groza, but not alone, because of course there was also already the future, you know, dictator Gheorghe Gheorghiu Dej. So this was in 1945. Obviously in 1946 Romania had a seat at the peace table in Paris, but they already kind of had a little map laid out for the future of the country and a plan with its people in their rightful places when things were about to go down. And that was very, very important. So here basically Stalin kind of puts the set and the ground rules for his Iron Curtain, having, you know, having that presupposition that, well, he needs it and it's a must, because that way no one can attack Russia ever again. Which is, sure, whatever. It's preposterous, we all know it. But that's at least one of the official explanations of, well, him and his regime. And, well, this meant that even though Romania was basically freed, and even though Transylvania was back to Romania, Romania didn't get Transylvania back until 1947, when the complete switch to communism happened. But we still have ways to go until 1947, because a lot of things happened. One of the main things was obviously the instant, basically preparedness. They tried to prepare the people of Romania for the transition into communism, from eliminating anyone and everyone that was opposing them to through incarceration, through sending them to the gulags, through downright killing them if they were violent on the spot, and you know, taking inventory of how much everyone had, how much everyone produced, how much and where they were working, how much money they had, and all that very, very interesting stuff, honestly, if you kind of know about it. And but we'll get into that next episode, because I want to show you with pictures and a bit more detail, and go a bit more into detail, maybe even pull out an interview or two with maybe subtitles, with people that actually lived through that. So yeah, it was very interesting to see how people basically weren't sure about what they had and what they didn't have, what they could and could not do, and they had no assurance, even though they had a king. Their government was slowly turning to communism, and we're slowly getting towards March, but we're gonna touch on that also next episode. I just love teasing you guys, whether you're watching live or listening, because there's quite a lot of stuff to talk about. So, of course, Roosevelt, Churchill and Stalin meet at Yalta. Dresden is destroyed by a firestorm after Allied bombing raids. And that's basically February. And then we move on to propaganda and how they tried to... how they manipulated the Romanian people. As I told you before, they were seeing themselves as liberators. And even King Mihai the First, he was like 18 by now, so he was very, very young for a king, or even younger than 18, if I'm not mistaken, was like 16 or 17 by 1944. He was very, very naive in thinking that he could do anything due to the fact that he managed to have a coup, which was mainly, of course, helped and pushed by the Russians and, you know, the communists and the allies, because of course it just simply had to. And while the government at the beginning was not fully communist, this was slowly started to change as people were manipulated into thinking and that the government was against them and their wishes, you know, like getting back Transylvania and re-establishing the Romanian kingdom that was previously, you know, before the war and before 1941. So with all that manipulation, with all the tensions rising throughout the country and Bucharest specifically, because that's where they were basically focusing all their efforts to gather all resources and to infiltrate the news media, to infiltrate the government and the police and the army, so they could have a strong stronghold on Romania. And by the time 1945 came along, King Mihai had lost most, if not all, of his power, even though the government itself wasn't a majority communist. Which is kind of interesting to still have power in some sense, but then again have none of it, because you don't have the power of information, you don't have the power of defending or attacking or doing anything at all, even through law, which laws can be meaningless in the face of, you know, a whole army and another potential coup. So while a coward, I think Mihai was very smart in trying to hold back steady and try to negotiate his leave, basically just like his father, which basically died in Portugal. He would, you know, escape to, if I'm not mistaken, Switzerland after 1947, after the communists properly installed themselves in Romania. So it's very interesting, also the fact that it took them, it took the Russians 2 years to implement all this stuff in Romania, even though they had the grasp on Romania from the moment they went in. And for example, even in after August 1944, if there was anyone saying anything, or even the state itself tried to protest, even the king, if he tried to protest or anything like that, the Russian army, the Russian tanks would simply start, you know, a parade, basically parading their tanks and army on the streets of Bucharest to basically squash any and all opposition and to quiet anyone. Now imagine that this wasn't just in Bucharest, this was everywhere in Romania, because that's how it works, that's how you gain the control of a whole goddamn country if you want to expand. And it's just frustrating to think that the allies allowed this, and they didn't have the balls to, I don't know, nuke, for example, Moscow or Stalingrad, you know, and finish what was the Cold War II. But that's probably for some other YouTuber to debate and write about. I'm not going down that path, sadly, as entertaining as it might be. So, of course, now we have another change in schools. All the manuals and stuff like that were now to be provided by the and vetted by, you know, Stalin and the Communist Party. So everything they were learning in Romania was to be overseen by the Russians, and that meant also learning a new language in Russian after being taught, at least in Transylvania, Hungarian since 1941. And it's just a doozy for me to. I don't know, I just flipped the hell up. And Jesus Christ, how can a child even adapt to something like this after getting bombed? Not once, but twice, and getting, you know, terrified and just simply shocked, shell-shocked. Honestly, it's absolutely mind-boggling how my grandfather managed to basically survive all these years. Somehow he managed to survive, and somehow through all the propaganda and through all the hardships, he managed to pull through. Though I did mention propaganda, that we're gonna talk about it. We're at the end of the podcast. We're gonna talk about that next time too, because I wanna show you some very nice pictures and kind of get you to understand how easy it is to basically create any piece of propaganda. And since here in Romania, in about 2 months, we'll have a presidential election, and there's already a bunch of fake news and propaganda out there, I think it's very, very interesting and topical. So, if you watched live, thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for, you know, spending your precious, precious time. If there's one thing we're learning through this podcast, is that time is precious, and who the hell knows when something horrible is gonna happen. Even though all you want is to live a normal, simple life, you might have the bad luck to not have that, not even have that. So again, thank you for watching. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and all that. If you're listening, thank you for listening. See you next week around same time, and don't forget, stay happy and stay safe. Bye bye.